Hello, everyone. So this is a special edition episode of Cross Trails podcast. This is a post-race report for the Centurion Winter Downs Way 100. I'm absolutely battered, safe to say. So what I'm going to do, because I'm worried about repeating myself, I'm just going to go straight to the Q&A. I put a Q&A out on Instagram, and I surprisingly got quite a lot of questions, so I'm going to go through them. Like I said, I just don't want to be repeating myself a lot. It's more for your sake than mine. So let's cut right to it. So the first question is from Amy. What you fueled with and how you keep it down. So I fueled mostly with Voom products. Voom's a company I'm an ambassador for. I love their stuff. So I used mostly the power bars. They have the caffeine kick bars and the sort of, hydrate bars, the electrolyte bars, sorry. Yeah, used them and the carb based drink mix. And then also just had their like electrolyte drink mix as well. So that's mostly what I fueled with. I did have real food, which I'll come on to, but yeah, that they're mostly like sort of like race fuel, if that makes sense. That's what I fueled with. So yeah, just basically that. And I find with the Voom products, it's really easy on the stomach. I've never had any issues with them before. I mean, I chundered at UTMB, but I think that was a mix of heat as well, so I'm not, blaming anything that I took in that day. So yeah, it was just good Voom products. This one's from Josh Williams. What was the hardest part? At which point did you come close to stopping if you did? Okay, I thought he was saying, I bet you. All right. I thought it was a sort of a backhanded compliment there. Hardest part, it's hard to say. Poor, probably. I went to a really dark place. Was it about 8 or 9 o'clock the next day? I can't remember what mile I was at. I might have been like mile 70 odd. I was just really tired. Really, really tired, and I really slowed down. I was really struggling. And I got really emotional. Really, really emotional. Like I was just sobbing. I was like, yeah, sending voice notes to people who were like, checking up on me. I was just voice noting them, fucking sobbing. Like, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's just weird. But at that point, I didn't think about stopping. I was fine, to continue. The only time I was thinking about potentially stopping, I was about, was that 90 miles in. I think it was the last time I saw my crew, or second to last time, sorry, because I was really worried about cutoff. I thought I wasn't going to make a cutoff, and I was kind of like, if I'm not going to make a cutoff, I'm not going to put my body through more of this shit. But my crew, I told them, I gave them the go ahead to tough love, you know what I mean? So, and I actually did have loads of time. It was just me being paranoid because I wasn't going as fast as I'd like. Sorry, I got hair in my mouth. It was just me being paranoid and just sort of being very down in the dumps. So yeah, that was it really. Yeah, hardest part was just tiredness. I kind of wish I sort of trained to run sleep deprived, but I sort of before. During my training was like, well, no, because that's going to affect my training later and later on in my training program, so I don't want to do that. But I think I definitely should have done that, and when I go for some future 100 milers, that's what I'll do. So yeah, this one's from Gemma Bishop. How'd the footwear hold up? Fucking brilliant. So I had the Innovate Trail Talons, the new ones, had them on for the whole 100 mile. Fantastic shoe, bloody brilliant. I couldn't fault them. comfortable the entire way around. I mean, my feet will probably tell you different because the soles of my feet are just really, they're just caked in blisters. But I think, you know, for the terrain I was covering, the amount of time I was on my feet, blisters are always going to happen. It's just always going to happen. So yeah, fucking brilliant. This one's from Hoppy Raptor. Lots, kit, nutrition, fighting the fatigue. What would you do differently? So kit was mostly Innovate, actually. So I'd Innovate shoes, Innovate tights, Innovate waterproof jacket, Innovate mittens, which I actually wore quite a lot, especially during the night sections. So yeah, a lot of Innovate. Nutrition, again, Voom products, and food was mostly, so I had lots of food with my crew, lots of snacks. Ella's Kitchen I use a lot, porridge. So, but basically what I was doing for my nutrition was, say I got to dinner time, I would eat dinner, and then when it got to breakfast next morning, I'd have breakfast, and I was just trying to keep it as sort of natural as I could. So like it started at 2 o'clock, we got to the start at 1, and I had my lunch before the race, you know. So yeah, I tried to keep that as natural as I could. Fighting the fatigue, lots of Voom caffeine power bars, and actually caffeine bullets as well. And I'd drink coffee whenever I could. So they had coffee at the checkpoints, and my crew had coffee with them as well. And as well, just trying to stay awake on you. Like there was a few times where I was falling asleep while I was walking. It was a lot of the wanting to finish that helped me fight the fatigue. What would I do differently? I don't know. So right at this moment, I'm thinking I'd never want to do it again. but if I was to do it again, probably, I don't know. I actually don't know, because there's everything I'd done right. It was just my legs, my knee on the day just didn't like it after, I think it was after 50 miles. So yeah, what would I do differently? There must be something I'd do differently, surely. But right at this moment, I can't think of it. It might come later on in the episode, I think, but I'll keep that. I'll come back to that, because yeah, there must be something. This one's from Sarah Raymond. How did you find self-navigating with only 3 aid stations? So the self-navigating was actually fine, because part of the mandatory kit is you have to have the GPX on either your watch or a handheld GPX device. So I basically just followed my watch. Because it followed the, let's find out, it's the North Downs Way. No, you start on the South Downs Way. South Downs Way, Wayfarers Walk, St. Swithin's Way, and the North Downs Way. So all of the ways are signposted, but it's just parts, obviously, where you leave the North Downs Way to go when you go from the South Downs Way to Wayfarers Walk, you just sort of like need to, you know, look where you're going. And then obviously, yeah, just follow your GPX on your watch. I did have a fucking drama at the end. So I think it was like 96 miles in. So I thought I charged my watch at mile 60, but it obviously mustn't have charged. So 96 miles in, my watch died. So I had to borrow one of my crew's watches just purely for the GPX. So yeah. Ooh, that's one thing I'd do differently, actually, is make sure everything's charged. Make sure every checkpoint just charged, even if it's just for 5 minutes, get it charged. Because yeah, at the end, like obviously my watch died, my phone was on like 5%. So it was like, yeah, definitely would have charged everything. Just make sure everything's, you know, working because it could have been catastrophic if I hadn't run into my mate George during those last 5 full miles. Tinkerbell, also known as Rachel, why do you look so sad? So I'm guessing that's in due to the picture of me on the for the Instagram post. Probably because I was feeling a bit battered, to be honest. Right. I've got a few questions from my friend Sarah, or it could be Adam. There it's a couple's account. Lovely couple. So we'll go through all of them. Was there a piece of kit you wish you'd had? Do you know what? No. I think I had everything I needed because I had all the mandatory kit and then I had like just extra layers as well in my bag just because I knew the temperature change from daylight to nighttime was not much. So I think it was like highs of 7, lows of 5. So it wasn't that much of a temperature drop. That might be another question I'll come back to, but because I can't think of anything right now. I was pretty happy with everything. So let's have a look. What else? How many times, if any, did you change your socks and shoes? So shoes, I didn't change once. Innovate Trail Talons, fucking brilliant. Socks, I changed twice. So I went through, so I had 3 pairs of socks. So yes, I had my original pair of socks, which were Innovate. And then I had another pair of socks and I changed them. But that's because they were like below the ankle and I found debris was getting into my socks quite easily. So I went for over the ankle socks. It would have only been one change of socks if I wore the right socks. So yeah, that's it. And it was only because I only changed the first pair of socks because I went through probably about 0.5 kilometer of ankle deep water. So that's the only reason my feet were freezing. How did you find the nav? A few people had issues. I found the nav absolutely fine. I do understand some people did have issues. I literally just kept looking at my watch every now and again. If I hadn't seen a route marker in a while, I'd just check. There was a few times when what I'd do is, because the GPX sort of cuts across places quite often, I would get my phone out and have a look at it on Strava, because it's very sort of precise on which way to go. So, and obviously you can sort of use your phone as a compass to make sure you're going the right way. So yeah, it was just a case of just be vigilant of what your GPX is showing you, and if you're not sure, double check on your basically a handheld device, which was my phone. So yeah, I didn't have any issues at all. The only time really was at the end on Box Hill, because you literally couldn't see much further than your hand from your face because of the mist. And I had Kev's watch on, which I was, the GPS is different on his to mine. I was a bit like, yeah, I was a bit sort of put off by that. But yeah, no, got there because I had George. As there were only 3 checkpoints, what were they like? Was it quality hot food? Checkpoints were cool, yeah. The first one was questionable. The first one was fine. I can't even remember what the hot food was there. I don't think I didn't have any hot food at the first one. But yeah, it was kind of like you're left to your own devices and you had to go and ask the volunteers who were chatting in the kitchen for something if you wanted something, you know? So I wanted coffee and I was looking around and there was like no volunteers. And I went in the kitchen and they're just there chatting and I'm like, should be someone out here, but you know, whatever. And there was a rule, you have to take shoes off at each checkpoint, and they just someone who was at the front door said, yeah, just go in. So they weren't really policing that. I'm not sure if that was because they couldn't be bothered policing it rather than, it's, you know, it's just easier to clean it or what. But yeah, first one was a bit questionable. After that, though, the second and third were bloody brilliant, especially the third one. They were all so nice. So hot food at both I had was pasta and tomato pasta sauce. So the second one I was served by a lovely French lady called Laure. Really, really lovely. She got me my pasta, made sure I sat down, made sure there was anything I wanted. Then a lad came over and said, do I want a drink? I said, yeah, coffee please, mate. You know, spot on. Third one, obviously she was tracking, but she, as soon as I came up, she was like, hello, Christian, and all that. And, you know, I just thought that was a really nice personal touch, because usually when you, on other races, when I've got to checkpoints, they sort of squint and go, 251, it's 251's here, and then that's it, and then they go on inside. So, yeah, it was really nice just to be welcomed by my name. It was just like a really nice little touch. And I got in, and I didn't have to take my shoes off for that one. They had like coverings over the floor, and they had sofas. Oh, it was so nice. And again, I literally just had a bowl of pasta and coffee, and then I was out. I wasn't trying to be in them for too long, just because I had a crew, and because people who were crewed were obviously staying in there for quite some time. They're in there for like an hour, 2 hours, and obviously that's how I was sort of making up time, even though I was still quite far back in the pack. But yeah, quality. It was just pasta, you know. It was, I wouldn't write home about it, but it was good. It was, it done the job. What was the thing you asked for most from your crew? You know what? I didn't ask for anything. I was just more given stuff. I wasn't very good at drinking, and I wasn't very good at eating, to be honest. So they were just sort of, yeah. There was one checkpoint, I can't remember how far I was into it, where Kev was like, right, drink that, eat that between each sip. So like it was like at Ella's Kitchen, like apple, carrot and parsnip, like baby food thing I bought. So I'd like have a bit of it in my mouth, and then he'd like give me my cup. I had bouillon, and he had his gas stove. So he'd like, right, after that, take a sip. So he was like making sure that I'm like sipping on this and eating, you know, mouthful at a time and stuff. There wasn't much I really asked from them. They were apps. I couldn't have finished that race without them. They were just the perfect team, because they're both very experienced runners. Kev comes from an event background himself, and I liked how They're very different people, like personality wise, I find, but they just worked well. And I think that is why. I think if you get two people who are too alike, then shit doesn't get done. So yeah, I couldn't have asked anything from them, really. They were perfect. I realized they sort of had their duties. So Kev was always on the kettle and stuff, and then Jez was always like refilling my bottles and, you know, packing my pack of stuff. So yeah, no, I couldn't have asked for anything. How does this 100 mile compare in scale to hard to other hundreds you've completed? So I found with this one, it was slow, lots of wet mud. Yeah, much slower. Yeah, that's it, really. It was just much slower, and that was it. Just how difficult and energy-sucking were the underfoot conditions? They were grim. They were really, really grim. There were quite a few road sections, which were nice, unless it was a steep downhill and you have a gammy knee, then it wasn't so nice. It zapped the energy from your legs, and at one point, I think I was doing only for 1 kilometer, but there was 1 kilometer where I'd done like 24 minute kilometer just because I was struggling. Do you think it was a very small starting field for both distances? Is this a notoriously hard race? So notoriously hard race, it's hard to say because this is the first year it's been on for the 100 miler. This is the second year it's been on for the 200 miler. So I can't say it's notoriously hard. It's harder than the guy who runs Centurion Running. He has set this up as a, like, this is harder than our other races. And this is sort of like comparable to Spine in a way. Like a lot of his like videos that he's done for like, you know, equipment for this race, he sort of said, you know, if you're going to do a Spine, you'll need this and all this sort of stuff. So yeah. So yeah, I think on his roster, it's the hardest of his races. I can't say because it's the first of his races I've done, but from what I've heard from other people as well, because there are a few people I was running with who, like, you know, just sort of like how a lot of people in the Northwest do GB Ultras races, a lot of people down there do Centurion races and just know all the races. So but a lot of them were saying it's bloody difficult, and I think it's a small starting field, yeah, because I think there was only 66 people in my race. I can't remember how many there were in the other race. For the 200, I'm not sure how many they were compared to last year, but it's a 200 mile race. There's not going to be hundreds of people signing up for it unless it's, you know, one of the big ones like Spine or whatever. Hang on, just gonna need to sit down. I've been stood up and my feet are battered. And also it's a new race, like I said, like this one I've just done was the first. So yeah, maybe after this year there'll be more people. What's your fueling look like over the 100 versus what you had planned? So I planned to eat a lot more than what I did. That's it, really. I had all my stuff in the van with my crew and I didn't eat a lot of it. And it wasn't a case of just like, oh, I can't keep anything down or anything like that. It was just a case of I'm not hungry, and if I force anything down, maybe it won't end well. So yeah, it was mainly that, really. Where's your question gone? Oh, this question's by Gaz. Sorry, I've been answering so many questions from Sarah and Adam. So this is from Gaz asking about what's fueling look like over the 100 versus what you had planned. I just expected to eat more than what I did. But like I said, I was eating real food. So, and I think as well, the pace I was going meant I wasn't burning as many calories. I think, going from Strava, because my watch died, and then I got a new one, but George tagged me in his activity, because we basically, from 30 miles, we were neck and neck most of the race. So, but from my original one, I think I burnt about 10,000 calories for 96 miles, and I burnt about 2,800 calories on UTS 100K. So it just shows you like the sort of the effort that went into UTS compared to this. So yeah, not so much. This one's from Nathan Bauer. I'd like to hear your view on value of regular checkpoints. Oh mate, huge. If it wasn't for my crew, I probably would have DNF'd because of the such huge gaps between checkpoints. I think I would have definitely, either from tiredness, because I was walking zombie for a lot of it. 100%. It's just a morale boost more than anything. Even if you're not needing much from the checkpoint, just a friendly hello and just to take a seat undercover is just so nice. And just to know as well that that's a chunk of the race done. So it's sort of like, I don't know, so like with ultras before when I've struggled and I've wanted to DNF, well, I've been like, well, it's only 8 miles to the next checkpoint. Just get that done and see how we feel. And it's just that constant. It's only 10 miles to the next checkpoint. Just do that, see how you feel. And then by the time, you know, you really feel like you're on death's door, the finish is only 6 miles away. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But whereas this one, it was like, first checkpoint wasn't so bad, 30 miles. Actually, it's already an ultra marathon before you get to the first checkpoint. And then 20 miles to the next one, a tough 20 miles to be fair, and then another 30 miles. So like, I think between checkpoint 2 and 3 is possibly where I would have DNF'd if I didn't have crew, which is why I think they are so important. And yeah, have a huge value. So yeah. Really, really, really important. There was a question I was going to go back on. I don't know which one it is. Oh, was it this one? Was there a piece of kit you wish you had? Yeah, no. Yeah, no. No, there wasn't. So, yeah, so that's the Q&A done. So, yeah, the actual race itself was brilliant, it to be fair. Yeah, really, really good. So my only gripe with it, to be honest, was that there was no parking at the finish, because there's just not enough room. That, you know, I understand why there wasn't parking, because they had to use the space for the staff, the medic team, and whatnot. But yeah, it was just a bit annoying. So I had to pay like £50 for parking, which I did find out. This is something maybe I wish I'd done differently. If I pre-ordered, it would have been a lot cheaper. But there was lots of parking options. But the most, the one that was the, what's the best way to describe it? The easiest one for me. Yeah, cost like £50, which we weren't too happy about. But it was 48 hours parking, so really, it's just over £1 an hour. And I knew my car was fine. So, yeah. So, yeah, and then I stayed in the accommodation at the finish. Stayed with a lad whose name I forgot. He's from Edinburgh, and he'd done really well in the race. Hang on, let me just have a look at the results, because I might recognise his name. I think he'd done, he might have just come after Howard Dracup, actually, you know. Oh, why does it keep showing me the wrong people? That's not him either. Nicholas Wolverson. That's who I had shared my room with. Came 13th overall. Fair play, what happened? 22 hours. Wow. Definitely downplayed his abilities when we were chatting. So yeah, stayed the night with him in our little twin room. It was very very cozy. And yeah, we just chatted about, you know, what we'd done previously and whatnot. It was nice. And then next day, he went down to watch the 200s going up, you know, going away. But I was like, fuck that, I need as much sleep as I can get, because our race didn't start till 2 o'clock. Obviously, I was up at 7. I didn't go back to sleep because I could hear all the other runners getting ready to go. So thanks 200 mile runners, get me up. And Yeah, and then once they'd gone, I registered for my race, where it was a really, really easy process. I think I was actually like the first one in. I think I actually was like the first person that got in actually. So I'm just checking something because, yeah, there we go. So yeah, got in, and then that was a really nice process. Met Sophie Bennett as well, who I've known from Instagram for a little while, and we were just chatting for ages while she was doing my mandatory kit check. Got her in a bit of trouble because there was a queue forming. So I did apologize to her. And she told me to get off my phone during the run. She's like, get off socials, meant to be running. But yeah, and then it was just sort of a case of waiting for Jez arrived first. So we went back to my car, packed all my shit from my car to his van, and then just tossed about in his van, just chatting, having a catch up because I've not seen him for a while. And then Kev turned up, and then we drove, transferred all the stuff to him, and then we went to the start, which was at the Amberley Minor Museum. Really nice venue. There was parking there, which we could have. So it was weird. So you could leave your car at the start and be absolutely fine. But then obviously you've got to get from the finish to the start. Yeah, for me, it just. Yeah. Would have just been easy to have parking at the finish, but well, that's my only gripe really with the race. But anyway, new drivers' problems, eh? And then yeah, basically the race started. I started off really well. I started off really strong. I think that's what my problem was. I was way too fast. So obviously, if you got me on Strava, splits you see are actually George's. I've got mine. I've hidden mine because obviously it will show that I've run 200 odd miles. So my fastest split was, it was like 5 minutes 51. Yeah, 5 minutes 51. If you're not a podium runner, you should not be doing that in a 100-mile race. So yeah, for the first 20 miles, I was averaging 6 minutes a kilometer. I should not have been going that fast. So that's one thing I will take from this race and learn is just go fucking slower. You're not a fast runner. Like, I'm not a fast runner. I'm not a podium runner. I'm not a sponsored athlete. Go slower. Like, if you're in the back of the pack, fuck, who cares? I'm there for myself, you know what I mean? It's so yeah, that's one thing I would learn from this. But other races, just start off slow, just go at a comfortable pace. I did feel comfortable going at that pace, but I should have looked at my watch, and because I did have my pace on my watch, because on my map I have, you know, screens underneath it with my average pace and the distance I've covered up so far. So I knew I was going too fast, but because I felt comfortable, I was like, fuck it. And my ego let me down. So yeah, after 30 kilometers, you're looking more at 8, 9, a few 7 minute kilometers in there until you get to mile. I'd say 35, and then it gets to more like 10s, 11, and then yeah, and then yeah, and then my watch dies. But yeah, whatever. What can you do? But met some really lovely people along the way. Paula Bradford, I ran with for quite a bit. I think she was like the first person that I actually like had a full conversation with. She went on to be third female. She is a really cool person. It wasn't until we saw each other on Instagram that I actually knew what she looked like. I had no clue. I was just like hot on the heels and just, you know, focusing on my head torch, what my head torch will allow me to see. She is a really cool woman. And actually, speaking of women, no women DNF'd in this race, which I think is fucking cool. How many men DNF'd? Let's have a look. Where's the tracker? I'll find it now. Actually, it will show me on the results, won't it? Yeah, of course it will. Here we go. How many men? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 15 men DNF'd, no women. And when you think about, so there was only 10 women who went into the race, but when you think there was 64 in total, percentage wise, that's a hell of a lot. So Kerry, another runner who I was running with quite a bit, Kerry Cooper, really lovely person as well. So we were running together, and we were talking about this actually, because we were talking about, oh, no women have DNF'd yet, which is bloody brilliant. And yeah, she was saying, like, I think in the average percentage of women in ultra races is about 10%. When you think like 10 out of 64 is good going, and the fact none of them DNF'd is fucking amazing. I lost Paula at mile, can't remember, I'm in mile 13. Yeah, because it was when I first saw my it was the first crew stop, because she went on because she's hardcore, and I stopped my crew. I think at that point, I think even if I didn't, I would have stopped just to say hello. It did help my morale, but it didn't help the fact that Kev had his dogs, and they are fucking lovely. Darwin and Jarvis, bloody lovely dogs. Pardon me. What else is to say about the race? There was lots of fallen trees, actually. Which either were obstacles to climb over up with dodgy legs, or you just had to find an alternative route. There was one where me and Kerry were running together, and we actually had to go a mile off course to do it. I think it added a mile onto our end result, which wasn't ideal, but it missed out a flooded bit, so I was quite happy with that. I mean, met some great people. George Berkeley as well, really nice lad. I think the first time I saw him was at checkpoint one. He was coming in as I was getting out. I think he was being sat down, and I was literally leaving, and then I think he just must have a pace on, because then I don't think I saw him at checkpoint two, but then no, because he caught up with me when me and Kerry got we were trapped by cows, so there was a gate to sort of turn right, but there were literally cows at the gate, and I mean, it's hard to tell if a cow looks unhappy or not, but one of them like had their head like underneath one of the barriers. It was just like one like scaffolding pole. And it had its head under, and we're like, oh, it looks a bit keen. So we're a bit worried. And then that's when George sort of caught up with us. Then George was pretty much just in front of me until checkpoint three. And then I overtook. And then he caught me up on. There was a night section, but it was a fucking good job because the visibility was shocking. It was so like the fog, there was like mist, and then there was like rain. Actually, one bit of kit that I would recommend to everyone is just like clear lens glasses. Fucking brilliant. I had them on for most of the second night. Bloody brilliant. So I bought them for UTS 100 because it was part of the cold weather kit. I didn't need it for that race, but I've just always had them in my gear room. And yeah, I just always take them to races now, just because when you got sideways rain coming at you towards your face, invaluable, literally. Oh, like, I just felt so smug wearing them as well. Like I must have looked like a bell end, but I felt smug wearing them. So like, nah. So yeah, brilliant bit of kit, but the mist was so bad that you could only really see in front of you with both mine and George's head torches combined. And I, you know, we both had Phoenixes, so you know, not cheap, you know, head torches. And then yeah, and then finished. Jez had to go home, unfortunately. Oh, actually, I did feel sorry for George because we were going up Box Hill, and I couldn't bend. I still can't bend my left knee, so I was going up like literally one step at a time. And if you know Box Hill, a lot of steps. So went up for it. So he'd go up, and then I could just see his head torch like turning around to like. Check on me. I just kept saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry, mate." And he was like, "It's fine, it's fine." I was like, oh, "Is it though?" oh, I did feel sorry for him, but yeah. And then we got to the top, and then we met Kerry again, and I think a gentleman called Nicholas. And then yeah, and then yeah, I was just happy to finish. Oh, you know. Did I finish when and placement where I wanted to finish? Absolutely not. But it was just the fact that I finished was amazing. The fact I finished on my birthday was even better because if I was really because if I was chasing cutoffs, I would have like finished on the 13th, but I finished on the 12th. So. I was over the moon with that. So yeah, I keep sort of like putting myself down about it. But you know, what can you do if your legs don't want to go tough, you can quit or you can just keep putting one foot in front of the other and just keep going till they can't. And that's exactly what I've done, and I finished. And I'm quite proud of that. So, because I know for a fact, and I know if you listen to this, you're probably not one of those people. But I know people who will be like, "Do you see what place he finished in?" Because yeah, whatever. But and you know what? I don't care. But so, end of the race. Yeah. So Jez unfortunately had to go home, so I didn't see him at the finish. But Kev was there waiting for me, which was really cool. And then, yeah, got my buckle, shook hands with George, carried Garth and seen a mate, got my print of the map, which is going to get framed. And then, yeah, and then it was basically it. Kev had to crack on, so I didn't want to keep him longer, so I was just like, right, okay. You know, I've kept I've kept you for a long time. Let's just crack on. You know, I couldn't be selfish about it. I knew there was people getting pictures in certain places and stuff. Let's just crack on. Let's just go. Got my picture with Kev at the finish. That's all I wanted. You know what I mean? Like, I just wanted a picture with my crew. In fact, Jez wasn't there. It was a bit sad, but I got it with Kev, so it's fine. It's all that matters. And I got my buckle. So, yeah, got that. Basically, that was it then. Got my stuff out of Kev's van. Well, Kev got my stuff out of my van while I hobbled to the car. And then, yeah, we said our farewells. I got in the car. I went on the gram for a bit. Responded to a couple of messages. Honestly, I cannot describe the gratitude I feel for the people who messaged me during and after the race, because I said it on my Instagram post. I genuinely had a lump in my throat. Like I said, I was sobbing on the race, but like, you know, when I got a voice note from my good friend Lewis Ferguson, and but even now it's put a lump in my throat. It was just so supportive and so positive, and you know, he knows I'd go to the end of the earth for him, but like, it just that voice note just done so much for my morale. And got one. Who else did I get? I got a few. I did get a few. Who else did I get one? Got one from my mate Tom. Got one from. Let's have a look. Oh, got one from Hayley, which was really nice. Hayley loves hills. Who else did I get one from? Maybe that was it. I'm sure I remember. But oh no, it's because so after the race, I was going through my messages, and a lot of people were getting voice notes replies because I just couldn't type. I was just so tired. And then once I sent them, I literally fell asleep in my car, and then drove to Woking, which is about, it's meant to be a 40-minute drive. For me, it took about 50 minutes because I was like dangerously still tired. So I woke up at about 1 a.m. and my friend Emily, who's got a newborn child, was very, very kind and said, "I'm up feeding, come over, sort you out." And oh, fucking hell, that was it. Because like, I was, you know, asleep in the car, and I was sat, and my legs was like in a lot of pain. So yeah, I got there, and she was like, "What do you want?" You know, I was just like, "A shower." She's like, "Upstairs. Here's a towel." You know, got me all sorted. "Here's your bed." And I was like, "Amazing, cool." I went back downstairs. She got me, you know, drink and everything. And then I just had to be really cheeky. While she's carrying a newborn baby, I was like, "Emily, I'm really sorry, but do you mind if I sleep on the sofa? I don't want to do those stairs again." So I slept on a sofa, which thankfully was a pull-out. Woke up in a sweaty mess. I never sweat in my sleep, so I don't know what that was about. Wonder if anyone else has had that issue. Yeah, it was fucking lovely to see Emily. I don't see her often. We met during Dragon's Back Race, volunteering. And yeah, there's a group of us who have a really special bond from that event. And yeah, she's one of them. And it was just, yeah, really lovely to see her. So, yeah, it's not often I get to see her, so it was really nice. And to meet a baby, Teddy, Edward. It was, really lovely to meet him. And then, yeah, then it was a very, very long drive home. Saying that, the drive from Dorking to Woking was scary. Honestly, guys, if you're ever tired, don't fucking drive. I was swerving all over the place. If the roads weren't as quiet, I probably would have crashed into someone, if I'm honest. It was dangerous. It was stupid. I'm never doing it again. I thought I was okay because I'd had a nap. Absolutely not. So if you're in Chester and you're doing the Chester 100 or the Chester 50 or any neighbouring ultras, preferably Chester because I can come pick you up, and you need a place to stay, let me know because you can stay at mine. I can have a maximum of two people staying. I have a single bed in my office and a sofa. And if someone has an air mattress, they can sleep on the floor. But yeah, it was dangerous. And then, yeah, shit traffic on the way home. And I was just knackered. Got approached by travellers on my stop at, it was services on the M25 or the M1. Do you want a telly? No. Do you want an iPhone? No. Do you want an Apple Watch? No. Fucking hell. I'm from a traveler family, and it's like, guys, you're not putting us in a good light here. Got home safe. Now I'm just recovering. My feet probably hurt more than anything, to be honest, from the blisters. Because the knee, I can kind of like limp on and sort of take pressure off, whereas the feet, you know, there's nothing I can do. I'm wearing my UFOS. And that's as much as I can do. I think that's about it. I don't want to take too much more of your time. We're on 51 minutes. People I would like to thank are obviously Kev Keenan, Jez Willis, my crew, Darwin, Jarvis, the dogs. Amazing. Wouldn't have finished without them. Nelly Lukacs, Tom Owen, Lewis Ferguson, Josie, Haley, for their support during the race. There was fucking loads of people messaging me during the race. I honestly can't remember. After I finished the race, I had 80 unread messages on my Instagram. I've never had that many before. And then after I posted, I had about 90 unread messages. I'm like, this is never like. So, yeah. I just had so much support from people, and it means the fucking world, honestly. I can't put into words. I know a lot of you were tracking me, and can't put into words. And there's too many people to name, but go on. Let's go for my DMs. Let's see who else I can thank before I go. Alec Everett and Becky Ward, absolutely. Callum Davidson, 100%. Who else was Kieran Herzog? If you've seen my other podcasts, you know how much this fucking lad means to me. Josh Williams, he was sending me lots of encouragement. Libby and Nathan, brilliant guys. Hannah Lucas, who else? Just there's loads of people who sending me. It was just, overwhelming. It really was. Like, I was just going for more. I mean, I think after you ran for so long, you're quite emotional anyway. I was going through all just like with fucking tears in my eyes. No, thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Means the world. So yeah, on that note, I'm gonna box it off there because I think I've covered everything. I've done all the Q&A and everything. So yeah. Will I do another episode before Christmas? Probably not now. There's nothing else to do. I've got on Boxing Day the Chester Round the Walls race, which is a bit of a Christmas tradition for me. Before I host for the family on Boxing Day. It's like a tradition. We all get together. Grandparents used to do it. Now they're too old to be doing it. So, they're saying that their knees are probably better than mine at the moment. But yeah, so yeah, I'll be running that. I know a few people are doing it, so it'll be a nice social. That's the nice thing about it. Like, you see people, you know, at these running events, and because it's like straight after Christmas, you know, it just feels a bit more special. So yeah, Chester Arnold's race, and then nothing, maybe a few fell races, but then it will be the Lakes Traverse in April, 100 kilometers. I don't know how I'm going to train for that, to be honest. We'll see. Probably more recce than anything. But yeah. So if I don't do an episode before Christmas, have a lovely one if you celebrate it. If you don't, have a nice day off. If you don't have a day off, I hope work treats you well. Yeah. So good night. Have a good one.